providing scholarships for students in marginalized communities, also celebrating the contribution of female veterans during Women's Veterans Recognition Week. Good morning. This is First Coast Connect. I'm Charles Griggs, sitting in for Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we'll talk to New York Times bestselling author and Northeast Florida resident, Steve Barry. Then later, we'll hear from Jacksonville singer Matthew Johnson as he warms up for his appearance again tonight on the NBC hit show, The Voice. The number to call is 549-2937. Plus, later, Culpepper is here to kick off the week of the players. But first this hour, how one Jacksonville teen is paying it forward. After his parents disowned him for being gay, Seth Owens' story was widely shared when his biology teacher raised $140,000 for his college education on GoFundMe, and he was also later presented a check for $25,000 on the Ellen DeGeneres TV show. Now Owens has launched his own organization to assist others in similar situations. The organization, Unbroken Horizons Scholarship Foundation, will be awarding three scholarships this summer to students who are pursuing post-secondary education and who may be challenged with their own unique life issues. Joining us on the phone right now is Seth Owens. Seth, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for being here. First of all, you're a freshman, so how's it going?
It is going extremely well. When I said on the Ellen show that I trip everywhere, I really mean it. The historic steps around Georgetown are beautiful, but it makes it challenging when I have books in my face all the time trying to catch up on reading while I'm running to class. But I absolutely love it there.
I guess since you've enjoyed, I'm just saying, have you had been forced into this local celebrity and national celebrity acclaim, how is that mesh with your attempt to be a normal student on campus?
So far, I have not faced any difficulties with that. I still feel like a very normal student on campus, and I am so appreciative of that.
Okay. And so tell us a little bit more about the scholarship. What inspired you to want to go ahead and help other students? Were you noticing other people in similar situations, or have you just been hearing stories about others that you can potentially help? How did this come about?
Well, since my situation, came to light, I've heard from others that they have gone through similar situations. I've heard from so many, and it's really sad to hear that. But unfortunately, 40% of homeless youth identify as LGBTQ, mm-hmm. which is much higher than the 7% of the entire youth population that identifies LGBTQ+. So we are disproportionately affected by homelessness, and that in turn leads us into other situations that are, risky behavior for survival. So it is definitely a problem within the LGBTQ+ community. But additionally, I was made aware that because I am a white perceived person, that I would have most likely received more support from the community and the nation. And so I felt that it was my responsibility to make sure that my peers have just as much of a chance to attain equitable education as I did and as I do. And so we have launched a group of teachers and college students and school psychologists across the country. We've launched Unbroken Horizons Scholarship Foundation with the goal of making sure that LGBTQ+ students of color have the resources to access education, post-secondary education at all levels, vocational, technical education schools, colleges, and universities. However, from the beginning, I have made sure that we have been an inclusive scholarship. So we are by no means turning away students who do not identify as LGBT or who may not identify as a student of color. We are a completely inclusive scholarship.
Okay.
But our reason for beginning was to make sure that LGBTQ students of color have the the resources to access the post-secondary education.
Okay. We're talking with Seth Owens, and he's talking about Unbroken Horizons Foundation, Scholarship Foundation. The number to call is 549-2937 if you'd like to get in on the conversation. And so you were saying about that this scholarship is really based on information that you received about students of color who may be LGBTQ that have been faced with similar challenges, who may not have found the type of support that you found as you were transitioning from high school into college. Can you share, would you like to share one of those stories, but without naming names, but can you share one of those types of stories?
You know, I can't speak on behalf of you know, my LGBTQ plus siblings and other folks out there. But in my own experience at high school, I saw my white privilege. And I really saw how I was treated differently than my peers who identify as students of color. And so it was, you know, in my own experience, I was able to see that race still has a big role in how we're treated in society. And it's not fair and it's not right. And so as someone who is a white perceived person, it's my responsibility, it's my obligation to not only denounce that white privilege, but to actively do something about it. And so that's really why we started the foundation. But I'm, you know, I've heard from so many people, and it's really difficult for them to, you know, for people in general to reach out and ask for help. And I've heard from people, and it is that much, you know, harder for students of color to reach out and to get that help because of just where we are as a society. And it's a sad truth, and it's often a hard pill to swallow. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the truth. And so once I came to understand that, then I realized it was time to do something about it.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about your support system? I know that you mentioned that several teachers have stepped up for you to help you start this organization, but talk a little bit more about your support system and how that came to be, and why is that, you know, so unique to other students who may be in a similar situation, homeless students who may be in a similar situation, and why it's important for perhaps teachers and other adults and people in leadership positions to pay attention to the environment for LGBTQ plus community.
So I have a gorgeous chosen family that is full of, you know, teachers and mentors and friends. And I was always because I was so focused on my education, and that's where I found solace was in my studies. I was able to build a trusting relationship with the faculty at my school. And I think that's what really, really played into it. When I was faced with these obstacles in my life, I was able to go to my teachers and ask them for their advice and for their support. And I know that it's difficult for a lot of students because of our climates at our school. It's hard to build trusting relationships with the school faculty. And I think that's something that, and definitely in public education, we need to work on is building trust between students and faculty. But because of that relationship I have with my teachers, I was able to reach out to them, and you know, they were able to point me in the right direction. Like, I remember one teacher giving me contacts to Jasmine, which is a local organization that helps LGBTQ plus students in Northeast Florida and Southeast Georgia. And so from there, I was able to receive advice on how to proceed and what the best way was, you know, to go forward was. And so in recognizing that the majority of students, or a lot of students, I should say, might not have those close personal relationships with their faculty at their school, our foundation is aiming to provide online resources for students so that we can point them in the right direction.
Okay.
Because often we find that millennials and Gen Z students, it's easier to access those resources online because we often feel that there's less judgment in communicating with someone online rather than, you know, speaking about your problems to someone face to face.
Okay. Sounds good. The number to call, if you're just listening, we're talking with Seth Owens. He's a student at Georgetown University from Jacksonville. And he's just started an organization called Unbroken Horizon Scholarship Foundation to help students who may have been, you know, maybe homeless and find themselves in a situation similar to his as he matriculated, transitioned from high school to college, he was homeless. You were homeless at that point, and using those resources to help others. So the number to call is 549-2937. Give us a call if you'd like to speak with Seth or have a question for him. Seth, I'm still a little curious about your freshman year, and you're doing a lot. I mean, you've got a foundation that you've started. You're having your challenges here. You're trying to raise the money. And now you're thrust into a situation where you have to be a normal, everyday college freshman, which in and itself is difficult. How are you able to manage and maintain your academic success and do all of those things at the same time?
Well, it's definitely not easy. I'll have to say that. It takes a lot of personal strength, and it takes a lot of help from my chosen family. I lean on them quite a bit. And additionally, you know, I'd really like to stress I really believe that, you know, here in America, we refuse to acknowledge mental health issues. And to try and combat that, I try to be as authentic as possible about my mental health challenges. And I will be honest with you, you know, I've suffered with depression for years because of the environment that I was living at home. Mm-hmm. And it's something that, because of all the traumatic events that occurred back to back, in 2018, it's something that it really proved to be a huge challenge in college so far. Okay. And so, you know, I've had to find additional resources in D.C. and reach out. And, you know, I would encourage people in situations to not hesitate to reach out to mental health providers, because maintaining your mental health is so important. Not only
has that been difficult. As a freshman, to reach out and find those services and resources that you need?
Absolutely. It's difficult at the university level. Mental health resources are just not as accessible as they should be. And additionally, you know, battling with insurance is always a mess. And that's something that is really, if you're not really set on finding, you know, the right therapist and the right psychiatrist, it can be very difficult and discouraging when all of these obstacles are in our path. But, you know, I'd really encourage people to, you know, find something on your own, like I did with meditation, that helps me, you know, maintain my mental health. And also, it's not shameful to reach out to get a therapist, mm-hmm. And to get a psychiatrist. I often say, I believe every sane adult should have a therapist.
Are you, along with the scholarships, are you providing references or referrals to those students who may be in need of those services as well?
So we currently have on staff 3 advocacy and student support directors, and their jobs are to seek resources for students in specific situations. Okay. And so although we have not confronted that so far, and, you know, we would never go as far as to say that we are qualified to provide, medical advice. We, you know, would never say that. But we do have social workers on staff. We do have school psychologists on staff and longtime educators. So between all of us, I'm sure that we can find a local resource for that student in that specific community. You know, so we would advise people to reach out and ask, because we would love to point them in the right direction.
Okay. All right. The name of the organization is Unbroken Horizon Scholarship Foundation, started by Jacksonville's own Seth Owens to assist other students with challenges they may be having transitioning from homeless to college students. This is a great cause because of your own situation and your own support that you received around it. You are deciding to pay it forward. It's great.
Thank you.
Okay. Seth Owens, thank you for being on our show. And up next, we're going to have Veterans Recognition Week. And we'll be back on First Coast Connect.
Witness over three decades of jazz through 22 top five albums, five of which hit number one on the Billboard charts. The Rippingtons, featuring Russ Freeman, have continued to innovate. Jazz's Magazine has called their debut album the number one most influential contemporary jazz album of all time. Don't miss your chance to see the Rippingtons live at the WJCT Soundstage, March 28th. Tickets on sale now at floridatheater.com.
Becoming a WJCT sustainer is just one way to help eliminate the kind of fundraising that interrupts your favorite programs. When you make monthly gifts of $10 or more from your checking account or credit card, you're investing in journalistic integrity, quality storytelling, and a local perspective. Help us keep your public radio uninterrupted by becoming a WJCT sustainer at wjct.org/radiouninterrupted.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. This week is Women's Veterans Recognition Week, a week-long observance celebrating achievements of and bringing awareness to the challenges of female veterans. And local veterans April Caldwell, a money coach, and Karen Barnes Rivera, a marketing consultant, are planning to share their lessons learned in the military during Women's Expos at UNF on Saturday to help teach entrepreneurial women to take control of their business and their personal life. They're joining me now in the studio for a preview. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us about the expo. This is something that you two are working on that is going to bring awareness and bring some professional skills to women veterans. How did all of this come to be?
Okay, so great question. So myself and my partner, Kim Bynum, kind of founded this Women's Expo, and we really know it to be the only Women's Expo that is really recognizing female veterans. Have several speakers that are female vets and also first responders. And we decided we wanted an event that was going to help women business owners up-level their business. So veteran or not, they're coming out to learn new skills.
Yeah. And this event sits right in the middle of Women's History Month, doing Women's Veterans Recognition Week. So the timing is perfect.
It is. That might have been planned.
So what do you look to get out of this? I mean, the numbers here in Duval County, we were talking earlier, is that, you know, we have a misconception about female veterans. Talk a little bit about that misconception and set the record straight, because we have a lot of women who are veterans here who people don't, you know, really understand or quite know a whole lot about.
That's right. I'm going to turn that over to Karen. Karen's got all of our stats on that.
Thank you, April. I believe the numbers are that 25% of our population, one in four people in Northeast Florida, is either in the military, is a military veteran, or is related to one of those two populations.
Wow.
And Yes. In the United States, for example, there are 2 million women veterans, which is a large number. And one of the things that I think is very interesting is that sometimes it's GI is not always a Joe.
Yeah.
GI is a GI Jane, as we say in the community. So I think it's important to take away the invisibility factor for women veterans.
So what are some of the common needs you find for women veterans in this community? What are some of the challenges that women face as veterans?
Number one is healthcare. We are still the minority, I think, in the armed services. So going to your local VA and finding it to be women friendly sometimes is still a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think for female business owners with a military background, I think finding the connection between your military service and how you can be successful as an entrepreneur is not always something that comes natural and top of mind. But there is a higher success rate for veterans in entrepreneurship than in the civilian population in general. But I also think that another challenge for females in business who might have a veteran background, a military background, is understanding the marketing aspect of business, because as veterans, we tend to be team oriented and not talk about ourselves and be very careful about self-promotion. And so one of the things that I'll be talking about, for example, at the expo is how you can actually use your marketing efforts as an act of service to others and be of service to others in your business.
The number to call is 549-2937 if you'd like to join the conversation during Women's Veterans Recognition Week. Now, you talked about entrepreneurship, and I think that that's an important point because we know that one of the most liberating ways to show your leadership is to grow a business, right? Mm-hmm. And so talk a little bit more about some of the opportunities as entrepreneurs that you find most common among women veterans.
Well, I think the military really prepares individuals, male and female, for entrepreneurship because there's the dedication and the self-discipline that you need. Also, you are committed to the mission. You're focused on the mission, not the clock. And that's a really important feature of being an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And I think also the teamwork and the ability to take orders and follow orders and be flexible. Stay focused on the mission, but flexible on the details is a lesson I learned in the military. And that definitely applies to entrepreneurship, wouldn't you say, April?
Absolutely. And I think it's important, too, that women look and see what kind of resources are out there in their local communities, either because they are a veteran or a business owner or a female. You need to make sure that there's not money out there that you can be accessing. And then go and join these different events where you can learn more about how other successful women are doing it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talked a little bit about healthcare and access to healthcare. Is that transition because they had coverage, you know, while they were in the military, and then when they transition out, it's very difficult to find?
So I will tell you a funny story. Mm-hmm. So whenever I went to go get glasses through the VA, and I love the VA. Look, I'm a disabled vet. I don't pay deductibles. I don't have co-pays. I am fortunate to have coverage. But when I went to go get my eyeglasses, there's like three walls covered with eyeglasses for men. And on the right side, there's three rows of eyeglasses for women. And it just, I think, shows the unequalness of how what's available for women veterans.
Wow. And so when you're doing the expo, talk about some of the workshops that help women navigate some of the challenges that are out there.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. We have 24 breakout sessions. We have amazing speakers. I think 30% of these speakers are veterans or first responders. So we have Michelle Cook, who is the first female police chief of Atlantic Beach, and she's going to be talking about how women can avoid dangerous situations. We have speakers coming in from D.C., Virginia. We're going to have How to Launch Your Podcast. We are going to have sales workshops, marketing, branding, and, of course, money.
Wow. It sounds exciting. I mean, how many years have you been doing this already?
So I've been running women's events for about 8 years now, and they've all been monthly two-hour events. Mm-hmm. So I like to call this kind of my event on stilettos because it's going to be a longer, bigger event.
Okay. So I've got to ask the burning question. Where do the men fit in with this piece? How do men find a way to help support or be a part of it? And I know it's targeted to women, but you know, men are always looking to, you know, stick their nose in some place to find out if they can help. How can men support this effort?
I love that. Absolutely. Men are our partners in relationships and in business. And I think that the best way for them to help is to ask. You know, every woman has her own ideas of what's helpful. So they need to ask the women that are involved how they can be of assistance. Helping with this expo to promote it, to share it, would be a great way to contribute.
Okay. And so if you had to say one of the key highlights of this event, is what would that be? What are the one thing that you said, if you're going to come see this, be a part of this, what would that be?
I think that the one thing to take away about this expo is that it's going to be different than any other. This is going to be a hands-on, interactive, leave with your next action steps kind of expo.
Very good.
So that would be it.
Yeah. And so we'll see, we should see many businesses or ideas for businesses spring forth from female veterans who have been holding back on their great idea or their opportunity, and you're going to energize them to get there.
Absolutely.
That's the goal.
That's the goal. So talk a little bit more about what you're doing with your business. We're talking about you're a marketing person. So talk a little bit about how that you're making things happen for female veterans.
Sure. One of the most important and one of my favorite events that I'm involved in right now is the Women's Business Luncheon, and we meet once a month to go over marketing tips and ideas and strategies that help them elevate their business and help them to spend and invest their money wisely. So we probably have over 2,000 women in our mailing list, and we meet live every month to help them level up. Kind of like, that's what I love about the Women's Expo, is really helping women in business and veterans. We're actually producing a documentary right now that we did in December where we interviewed women vetrepreneurs.
They're vetrepreneurs.
Yes.
Like that.
So we're in the middle of editing that documentary right now.
Yeah, very good. And so you all have been working together to try to make sure women go forward and conquer. And in the middle of Women's History Month, we've got Women's Veterans Recognition event. And we're going to, you're going to be doing this March 16th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at UNF. Yeah. And so for people who want to get information, where do they go?
And they can go to womensmoneycoach.com, and they will find out how to get tickets and also learn more about the expo and our speakers.
Okay. Is the event free?
The event is not free.
Okay.
So tickets range from $37 to $70. So if you want VIP, then you get some extra access to the speakers.
It sounds very exciting. I mean, and again, I asked that question, how men can help, because I know guys are going to want to go to see what the lady veterans are doing, right? To see how they can get in there for more reason than one anyway.
Right, so. Yes. And this is not only for just women veterans, but any woman who is a business owner, has a side hustle, wants to start a business, wants to start a nonprofit, come out, connect with these other women, connect with these other women veterans, and just see how you can collaborate.
Okay, very good. All right, April Caldwell and Karen Barnes Rivera, thank you very much for being here, and good luck on your event this weekend.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be right back with more.
JCT's new podcast tells the stories of local people.
You have one of your soldiers laying there, and you have the person that is trying to kill your soldiers on the opposite side.
It wasn't so much that I felt guilty. I felt like it was impossible for him to love me.
I wasn't born with a crack pipe in my mouth. Thank you, Jesus. I'm not going to die with one.
What It's Like is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Christina. What's on the front page of today's Times Union?
At the top of the page, Florida lawmakers may...
Around the country, volunteers are reading local newspapers to people with vision loss or print disabilities. Did you know WJCT has this service? On a special radio we provide, you'll get the Florida Times Union every day. Learn more at wjct.org/radio reading. With help from sponsors like Florida Eye Specialists, Radio Reading gives voice to the printed word.
Hi, I'm Damian Lamar. Join me for Taste Test and broaden your musical palate as we redefine urban radio. Have a taste. Saturdays and Tuesday nights at 11 on WJCT 89.9 FM. Jacksonville, community-supported radio.
All right, welcome back. New York Times bestselling author Steve Barry, who's based here on the First Coast, just released his 14th Cotton Malone book, The Malta Exchange. He joins me now in the studio to discuss it in more detail. Good morning, Steve.
Good to be here.
Good. Listen, I'm going to tell you I've had an opportunity to try to read most of this book, and it is fascinating how you weave history through the Cotton Malone series. How in the world do you come up with these types of ideas connected to the historic complications of the book?
I look for something from the past, something forgotten, something that we don't know a whole lot about, so those obscure things. It has to be real. I can't make it up. And then it then has to also have some relevance today. It has to have what I call the so what. Mm-hmm. Okay, who cares? It's got to still be relevant now. So I need both of those elements in place. And that's how it comes together. This one came because of the Council of Nicaea. It deals in 325 AD. There's something that happened there in Turkey in 325 AD that still affects us today. Mm-hmm. It actually still has some effect on us today. And so I took that and wove together a modern-day thriller with my hero, Cotton Malone, and that's sort of my niche.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about how the book fits into the series altogether, the other 13
books. Well, a pope is dead, a conclave has been called, a cardinal has left Rome and is headed to Malta for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
He's in search of a 4th-century document from Constantine the Great, and Cotton gets caught up in that. And it's an adventure that starts in Lake Como, goes down to Rome, then goes to Malta, then comes back to the Vatican. And that's sort of, again, my niche. I have these European settings, these international intrigue, all of it, about 90% of it geared to history and factually correct. And I put a writer's note in the back of all of my books to tell you what's true and what's false, so you mm-hmm. can know that when you're done.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting how you get to learn about history while we're being caught up in this this mystery of and the doings of Cotton Malone. How did all this start? I mean, where did you get the idea for this type of writing style?
Well, I always liked action, history, secrets, conspiracies. That's my thing. And I tell people all the time, do not write what you know. That's really bad advice. Instead, write what you love. I was a lawyer. I knew that. I didn't really want to write about that. I was a lawyer for 30 years. I loved action, history, secrets, and conspiracies. And so I've started in that way. And I had 3 standalone novels, The Amber Room, Romanoff Prophecy, and Third Secret. And then I did the 4th book, The Templar Legacy, where I created Cotton Malone. And that's sort of my breakout book.
Yeah.
Changed everything for me. And now we're 14 books later in that series. People should not be put off by that, by the way, because I don't write them where you have to read them in sequence.
Yes.
You can skip around and read whichever one interests you.
Yeah, and it's obvious by that, because at the beginning of this book, I mean, you jump right in it and you get right into the point where you're talking about Mussolini and how mm-hmm. he came to his demise. And it's really a good history lesson for those, if for nothing else. I mean, you jump right into it. It's a great history lesson for people who are, who are fascinated by that type of mm-hmm. history, what was going on during that time period. And that I think for readers, it is important to understand what inspires an author to move information. And I think from the very beginning, you kind of feel the inspiration of the words that you're bringing from the weaving of a story. So talk about some of your most favorite points in the book.
Well, I my primary goal is to entertain you, mm-hmm. obviously. But if I can get you interested in something along the way, that's an added bonus. Yeah. This book starts with Lake Como and with some legendary letters between Mussolini and Churchill, which people don't know if they exist or not, but mm-hmm. there's been a lot of talk about it. And it involves the island of Malta, and Cotton gets caught up in that. It's sort of a way to get him into what's happening. He starts off after one thing, and it turns into something quite different. Mm-hmm. This is not a book, though, about a secret that's going to destroy the Catholic Church, and just the opposite of that. Every character in this novel wants the Catholic Church to be just like it is right now.
Yeah.
It is a book, though, about the Holy See, which is the government of the Vatican, and some very interesting things about that that I think readers will be shocked to learn.
So how do you get that information? How difficult is it for you to do the research and pulling all this together?
I use around 300 to 400 sources for every novel, and it's mainly books. And I buy almost all of them here locally at the Chamblin Book Mine, which is downtown and down at Roosevelt Boulevard. That's sort of my library. Mm-hmm. And he has Ron Chamblin, who runs that, has a magnificent history section there.
Wow, that's interesting to know that the origin and the nucleus of all your storytelling comes right here on the First Coast.
Pretty much, yeah.
So talk a little bit more about life on the First Coast. What is it like being, Steve Barry on the First Coast putting together these fascinating books?
We love living here. We lived in St. Mary's for many, many years right over the border in Georgia. We moved to St. Augustine 10 years ago, and we had a rule. When we were deciding to move, I had to be within an hour of the Chamblin Book Mine because that is my research place. That's where I go to do all of my research pretty much. He has anything you want there. His history section is probably 10,000 volumes, so there's a lot to choose from there, mm-hmm. and they're constantly changing. We love St. Augustine's, the oldest continuous European settlement in America. And, I mean, what's not to like about it? And we enjoy very much living down there.
Mm-hmm. So how often do you publish the books? How often do they come
out?
One
a year. I do. I'm a one-a-year guy. I couldn't write more than one. There's too much that goes into each one. It'd be nice to do more than one, but I can't.
Yeah. I mean, I would bet authors, budding authors out there would be like, they would want to know about your process. They would love to know about your process. How do you, besides doing your research at Chamblin's, how do you kind of start and finish? What's the whole?
Well, I have to sit down. I have to get that thing from history, the ooh thing. Then mm-hmm. I have to have the so what. Then I start putting the plot together. And that plot comes together from going through those 300 to 400 books mm-hmm. and pulling out information. And the plot begins to end. That's where I came across the letters of Churchill and Mussolini during the research. I said, wow, I didn't know about that. So I went in that direction. And then I sit down 4 to 6 hours a day, and I try to write my 1,000 words every day. And if I do that religiously, 12 months later, I have a book.
That's the process. Mm-hmm. That's the way they say it's supposed to work anyway.
Yep.
Yeah, so very good. I mean, I'm really fascinated by this book. The Malta Exchange is one of those reads that it's a page turner.
Thank you so much.
So if you haven't gotten it, if you're not familiar with Steve Barry and the books, you got to start. You can start with the Malta Exchange and get right into it, because I'm telling you, right from the very beginning, you are in there. So. Steve Barry, thanks for being here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And next, we're going to be going to Matthew Johnson is going to be our guest on The Voice. And we're from The Voice, I should say, recorded by Melissa Ross in her interview. So take a listen.
Well, you made such a splash on The Voice. All four chairs turning around. They were so in love with your rendition of I Smile. It was so joyful. It was so exciting. Tell me a little bit about how you made it onto The Voice.
So I decided to audition in Atlanta, Georgia at an open call location. And from there, I sang a song called Made Away by Travis Green. And they loved me and decided for me to come back. And from there, I just kept on impressing them, and they allowed me to audition in front of all the coaches.
You picked John Legend as your coach. So what's been happening since that happened?
So after I picked John Legend as my coach, he's been working with me, making sure that I'm prepared to take on the battle rounds. It absolutely is a competitive environment, but it's also a fun and loving environment as well. Actually, more of that than it being competitive. A lot of us artists are really just into music, and we all like to sing and work together, so it's like a big family, season 16 family. And then we also understand that at the end of the day, it is a competition. So we do want to show our best effort, but at the end of the day, it's all love and just support each other's gifts.
Sure. And what are your goals after The Voice? What do you hope to make happen with your singing career?
With my singing career, I just hope that I can continue to touch millions of people who love music the way I love it, and just bring a joyful energy to the world that really, really needs it.
Well, Matthew Johnson, we wish you the best of luck. All of Duval is rooting for you on The Voice. And thank you so much for giving us a few minutes.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate it. And thank you again for having me today.
That was Matthew Johnson talking with Melissa Ross. Tune in to The Voice tonight to hear Matthew and watch him do his thing. We're expecting big things out of Matthew because he is very talented from Jacksonville, and we know that he has the chops to pull everything together. You're listening to First Coast Connect. I'm Charles Griggs sitting in for Melissa Ross, and we've had some very interesting guests this morning, and we're looking forward to speaking with Cole Pepper momentarily, because he's got a lot to talk about, because it's going to be a great week in sports here in Jacksonville, in the Jacksonville area. And not just the players, but we've got some Jaguar talk as well. We know football season is still a few months down the road, but we've got some interesting Jaguar talk to get to the bottom of the day. And I am particularly interested in some of the news coming out of TIAA Stadium over there. So, take a listen, you know, give us a call, 549-2937, but go ahead and call now if you've got questions for Cole Pepper. We might take a few calls for him, and so continue to listen.
Is designed to be a binary. We have boys and we have girls, we have men's, we have women's.
For some high school students across the country, that no longer makes sense.
People in the stands were saying, you know, come on ladies, let's go girls. And not everyone out on the ice that day was a girl.
That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
President Trump promises to get more water to California farmers.
We're going to solve your water problem. You have a water problem that is so insane. It is so ridiculous.
But a new investigation finds problems with fast-tracking an irrigation plan. I'm Audie Cornish. What's at stake for farmers and wildlife this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The book An African American and Latinx History of the United States offers some fresh perspectives. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with author Paul Ortiz. We'll discuss the 1887 book, Prehistoric Remains in Florida, and talk about Florida students in France as part of the Veterans Legacy Program. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Anti-Semitism is real. So began a tweet from a now embattled congresswoman who's been repeatedly accused of anti-Semitism. Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar's criticism of pro-Israel lobbyists crossed a line into anti-Jewish rhetoric for many. How criticizing Israel and anti-Semitism get muddled, that's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sports Wrap Up with Cole Pepper is sponsored by Black Sheep, Orsay, and Bellwether Restaurants.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
So finally this morning, it's Players Week in Jacksonville. In the midst of a very busy sports month in the First Coast, Cole Pepper is here for more. Good morning.
Good morning, Charles. Always great to see you. And this month, great to see anybody, because those of us in the sports media business are going to be running around all over town with all of the things that are going on. Let's start with the players. Some of the players began arriving yesterday at TPC Sawgrass, some who did not play this past weekend at the Bay Hill Arnold Palmer Invitational, including Phil Mickelson, who did play, didn't make the cut, so he made his way up yesterday. More players will arrive today, and everybody should be in town by tomorrow. There are 11 past champions in the field, including two-time winner Tiger Woods, who, along with Adam Scott, are the only players in the field to have won this tournament when it was played in March. Of course, it's moving to March for the first time since 2006, and all of the top 50 players in the world are in the field. And of the 144 golfers in the field, listen to this, 100 of them have won at least one PGA Tour event. This is a loaded field, the best field in golf, as usual, at the Players. Course is going to play differently in March. Weather is going to be a factor. The course conditions will be different, the way the rough is utilized, the type of grass. It's an overseed now, so we'll see how it all plays out. I'm going to be interested to see who can take advantage of that. Maybe some guys who haven't had as much success in the past. Maybe the long hitters get a little more of an edge now than they have in some past years when it's been played in May. So here's my pick to win.
Okay.
And I'm not going to give you one because I don't think there's – some years you can pick one and that's the guy. But I'm going to give you two guys and a dark horse. The two top players in birdie percentage from the fairway this year, that's a stat the tour keeps, are Justin Thomas and Justin Rose. And this has always been a second shot course.
Yes, that's right.
Who can hit the irons from the fairways and get it close have always been the kind of guys who have won this tournament. And those two are the two of the top four players in the world right now in the world golf rankings and doing very well in terms of making birdies from the fairway. So I like those two guys, Justin Thomas and Justin Rose, the two Justins. The other guy I would include as a long shot is Gary Woodland. He's a long driver, but this year he's also number two in greens in regulation and sixth in birdies from the fairway. Of course, that being said, nobody knows how it's all going to play out in March. And if Tiger Woods happens to win, Charles, he would become only the second player ever to win three players' championships. The other guy by the name of Jack Nicklaus.
Oh, wow. I noticed that they've announced groupings already. It's kind of an added bonus to the hype.
Yeah, the featured groupings, there are four of them, and then coming up at 3 o'clock today, they'll let us know what time everybody is going off in their first and second rounds. But Tiger, of course, in one of those featured groupings that will go off Friday afternoon.
We're all making our plans. Yeah, so absolutely. How about the River Run? It was great last weekend.
Yeah, and we were fortunate to cover it on Channel 4. Love the event. And there were four winners that I want to touch on. The men's winner and the national champion of the 15K, Shadrick Kipchirchir, outkicked two-time winner Leonard Career and the 2016 winner Stanley Kibeny. Kipchirchir had finished second to those two guys two of the last 3 years at the gate, but he got some retribution this year by outkicking them at the end. The women's winner, Erica Kemp, had never run a 15K race in her career, if you can believe it.
Yeah.
She's more of a 3,000 and 5,000 meter runner on the track, but she ran past the field to win. We put more of a focus on local runners this year as well. The First Coast Cup is there for the top local runners. For the men, Chris McCaffrey won. When I interviewed him after the race, he wasn't sure if he'd actually finished first among the locals at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I actually won it. I didn't even know. I didn't even know. I was like, man, there's a lot of great people. So, well, that's exciting. You know, I mean, especially to be an ambassador for the sport to be somebody who can advocate for a lot of different types of people, I just absolutely love it. And this is coming from somebody who wasn't a runner in high school, who wasn't a runner in college, who started running in 2010. And, you know, I did the River Run the first year. I think it was an hour and 47 minutes or something around there. And to now come in almost 60 minutes ahead of that time, you know, 8 years down the road, just means, hey, just keep showing up.
Yeah, and it's a great lesson. If you want to get better at anything, keep doing it. And he has certainly done that. McCaffrey crossed the finish line shoulder to shoulder with Julie Stackhouse, the women's winner of the First Coast Cup. She started 6 minutes before him, along with the other top women in that equalizer time. Stackhouse was the runner who was attacked by a dog in the final mile of the Donna Half Marathon a month ago.
To be honest, the last month has been really tough. It was really a really hard effort to get to the start line today, but I have an amazing team that was helping me get here today, and so I'm very grateful for that.
Was there a chance you weren't going to run this race after what happened to the
Donna? There was, yes. I mean, it's literally been a day-to-day. I've done one workout since the Donna, so I guess I was rested coming in, but I love this course. Doug and Jane Allred, First Place Sports, this is my favorite day of the year every year, so I had to at least line up and give it my best.
Some great performances there by all the winners. Jaguars free agency also going on, by the way, if we need anything else to happen during this month.
Yes,
the legal tampering period starts today. By Wednesday at 4 o'clock, they can start announcing some of the signings. Nick Foles could be among them for the Jaguars.
That's what we hear.
Who did clear some salary cap space on Friday. Mm-hmm. And then, because we need more going on this month, don't forget March Madness, Sunday Selection Sunday, and then the first and second round games will be played here at the arena next Thursday and Saturday.
Believe it or not, it's a great time of year for sports in the Jacksonville area.
It really is.
Thank you, Cole Pepper.
Thanks, Charles.
All right. And that's going to be our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is on the board and our director. If you have any questions or comment about First Coast Connect, you can send an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. If you missed anything this morning, you can hear our rebroadcast of First Coast Connect tonight at 8 on 89.9. I'm Charles Griggs, sitting in for Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.